ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to all. My name is Andra, and I'm the host of this program, 1 Hour with Andra. And anyway, I'd like to welcome you back again this week. And in the following week, hopefully, my partner will be back on with me, the hypnotherapist, Rick Peters. And I'm sure he has a lot to say. But this week, we are very, very, very fortunate to have with us, again, Ron Van Dyke, discussing the book Anastasia and anything else that he would like to discuss. In fact, Ron, I started reading this book. You tout it so well. Dr. Carly loaned me her copy. And so I'm reading it. And
well, I should
so
be getting
far,
a commission for all the people.
Excellent book.
You're right. And I should be getting a commission on all the people that I've inspired to read the book.
Yeah, you really should.
I'm not, but that's probably because I haven't set up the, I forget what they call that program that you can, affiliate program, that you can actually get a small commission on books that are sold that if you set it up online. That is available for people.
I
know about it, but I haven't done
that.
It, so I have no one to blame but myself.
Yeah, you better get that done quickly. But this week, we were talking a little earlier, and we had talked about something you missed last week. Of course, we never got to finish, but, the week before last, you were talking about the prophecies concerning Russia in the book.
Well, actually, they're not concerning Russia that are in the book. As I was reading the Anastasia books, as I began reading them, I remembered that Edgar Cayce had said something about Russia.
Oh.
I read several of Edgar Cayce's books in the past, and I remembered him saying something about a spiritual awakening or something to that effect coming out of Russia. When I was to the end of book four, they made a brief reference in one of the translators or editor's comments. It wasn't actually in the book. It wasn't Vladimir's writing, but it was a comment made in the book that Edgar Cayce had indeed made comments about that. So I did some searching online, and I found a whole lot more than just Edgar Cayce talking about Russia in prophecy. And if you'd like, I can share some of the things some people have said about it.
And I'm sure the audience would love it, too.
Rudolf Steiner, who established the anthroposophical movement, which is the understanding the nature of man, that's what the word means. I had to look it up, because truthfully, I didn't know what it meant. Anyway, he taught that the Slavic folk soul would play a major role in the future development of a new spiritual humanity, and Russians constitute the largest of all Slavic nations. He saw the Slavs as a spiritual bridge between the Orient and the Occident, the East and the West. According to Steiner, the religious thought of the Orient belongs to the past, the Occident's philosophical scientific thought to the present, and the Slavic soul would bridge the two and create a new pathway to a spiritual future. More than any other national soul, claimed Steiner, the Russian folk soul strives to realize the world of the spirit. In Russia, the synthesis of the highest features of both Eastern and Western cultures would one day be achieved. Now, he was writing back in the late 19th and early 20th century, so he goes back a ways.
Wow.
But then we have Edgar Cayce, who was writing in the 30s and 40s primarily, and I looked up several of the things that he referred to Russia. There was he gave what were called readings for people when he would be in a trance, and one of his readings from 1944, he said, and all of them were written down as he was saying it. They were all taken down in shorthand and transcribed and everything. So this is word for word quote. In Russia, there comes the hope of the world. not as that sometimes termed of the communistic or Bolshevik, no, but freedom, freedom, that each man will live for his fellow man. The principle has been born. It will take years for it to be crystallized, but out of Russia comes again the hope of the world. And again, that was in 1944.
Wow.
Over a decade earlier, he channeled, "For changes are coming, this may be sure, an evolution or revolution of the ideas of religious thought. The basis of it for the world will eventually come out of Russia, not communism, no, but rather that which is the basis of the same as the Christ taught, his kind of communism." And that was 1930. And then in 1932, one more reading, "Of Russia's religious development will come the greater hope of the world. Then that one or group that it's closer in its relationship with God may fare the better in gradual changes and final settlement of conditions as to rule the world." And then many metaphysicians have heard of Alice Bailey. She wrote between 1922 and 1974, and she wrote, "Behind the closed borders of that mysterious and magnificent country, a great and spiritual conflict is proceeding. And the rare mystical spirit and the truly religious orientation of the people is the eternal guarantee that a true and living religion and culture will finally emerge. Out of Russia will emerge that new and magical religion about which I have so often told you." And I don't know this person. I never heard of him. Count Louis Hamon or Hamon, H-A-M-O-N, who wrote or lived between 1866 and 1936. He wrote in 1926 a book called Chero's World Predictions, and that was the pseudonym that he wrote under, Chero. He described as prophetic the history of the last... That book was described as the prophetic history of the last seven decades. He wrote, quote, "The day will come when Russian waste of blood, the blood he has and will yet pour out like water, will make a new heaven and a new earth." And the Indian guru Osho said, "Russia seems to be a land of destiny, not only for its own people, but for the whole world. It was the first to revolt against capitalism. It is going to again be the first to revolt against dictatorial communism. The future is of a democratic communism, a communism rooted in the freedom of man." So I found those fascinating quotes, and then I was reading them to my fundamentalist Christian uncle and talking to him about Anastasia, and he said he has a memory like I don't believe. He's 78, 79 years old, I think he is now. And he said, "I remember Pastor Lee, who was pastor in one of the churches that I attended as a teenager, but this was before my time. I don't remember Pastor Lee at all. There was there was another pastor after him, and then the pastor that was pastor when I was pastor in that church in New Jersey. And he said, Pastor Lee, I remember him saying on more than one occasion that the Holy Spirit was showing him, and he would prophesy that there would be a great spiritual awakening coming out of Russia." And this was probably back in the 40s and early 50s in a fundamentalist Christian Assembly of God church, which sort of blew my mind. I didn't know that, but my uncle, he remembers what these ministers talked about years later. I mean, he can remember and recall things that they said, and I mean, that just triggered that memory in him, and he shared it with me. So... it's quite fascinating that the books Anastasia are now sweeping the world, having sold over 10 million copies in Russia alone and been translated into 20 languages, and seem to make an incredible imprint on people who read it. Not everyone. Not everyone is ready to hear the message, but I know it's impacted me, and I'll share some of that if you'd like.
I'd love to. I just have one question to ask.
Yes.
read anything from Nostradamus on Russia, and then we'll get right to Anastasia.
I didn't, as I did my search on the internet, I didn't find anything specific about that. What I was looking for specifically was Russia, spiritual awakening. I just did an internet search, a Google search, and came up with various quotes that I shared with you. And I'm sure there are others out there that I didn't see because there were more references than I could even look at. These were some of the key references that I was able to glean out. And by the way, these are written. They're on my website in the article from Russia with Love, and my website is metagroups.info, and that's the food for thought section, or the Paradox Online section of the website.
Well, as you know, my partner and life partner and soulmate is Hungarian, Russian, and Polish. So he's
Slavic.
Yeah, and believe me, when I ask for someone like that, I ask for someone so spiritually attuned. And there's this beautiful family that is all completely spiritually attuned. Each of them have different walks, but spirit is a big thing for them.
Yeah.
So go on about Anastasia.
Let me just say, speaking of Russia again, there was another one that I didn't quote, Gurdjieff. Now, Rick probably knows Gurdjieff. He was one of the spiritual teachers to come out of pre-revolutionary Russia. And he said, remember what I now say, begin in Russia, finish in Russia. I didn't consider that as clear a quotation relating to spiritual development as some of the other ones, so I didn't use that, but I did list that in my article that I referred to from Russia with Love. Anyway, Anastasia, when I, as I shared, I think, a few weeks ago when I was on the program, when someone mentioned the book to me, I knew immediately that I had to read it. It just grabbed my attention immediately. And as I began to read, what Anastasia embodies for me is a modern person, specifically a woman, who never lost her God connection.
Mm-hmm.
And she, her spiritual gifts, all the miracles that we read in the Bible, that Jesus did and other of the prophets and the apostles did, all of the miracles, she does the same miracles, and it's in our day and age. It's, it's in the time that we're living in, which makes it even more powerful for me to relate to someone. Here's someone that is living it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only living it, she didn't come up like most of us, trained and brainwashed by our religion, by our education system, which dumbs down more than enlightens often. But anyway, she just grew up knowing God through nature and had a direct connection through the place where she lived, through the space of love where she lived in the forest in Siberia. She grew up knowing God intimately, personally, and allowed the powers to develop. I mean, it was just amazing, as I read through the six books that I've read so far, all of the many things that she could do, the how she could just go into the past, into the future, go into other locations. She seeming, even though it doesn't say that she would just materialize in locations, it doesn't either say how she got there. You know, she would show up in the city in Vladimir's apartment. And, in fact, Vladimir was in a situation where he was ready to get beat up by a bunch of thugs when he was feeling sorry for himself and decided he was going to visit a prostitute. He was being set up, actually. The whole thing was a setup, and all of a sudden, in the bar, Anastasia walks in. Now, I'm sure this is hundreds of miles from where she lives. All of a sudden, she comes walking in, and I'm not going to relate all the details of the story, but it just totally blew Vladimir away. And then they go back. She ends up going back to his apartment in the city, and the next morning she actually cooked him a breakfast, which she had never, that was the first time she'd ever cooked a breakfast. She figured everything out all by herself because she's brilliant. And she cooked him breakfast the next morning. But that night, when they get back to the apartment, after all the things that he had seen, he fell down on his knees before her, as in worshiping her. And I'm going to read you. Let me pretend you're a fly on the wall, mm-hmm. and you're listening to the conversation. She's speaking to him, Vladimir, I beg of you, get up off your knees. You should not bow down to me. And then she turns to God and she says, oh, God, I have overdone it. I have been in too great a haste. Forgive me for not making myself clear to your sons. And then she turns back to Vladimir and she says, in God's sight, Vladimir, people, all people are equal. They should not bow down to one another. I am simply a woman. I am man. Vladimir says, you are so vastly different from all other people, Anastasia. So if you are simply man, then who are we? Who am I? And she said, you are man too. Only as you are living out your life in vanity, you have not yet been able to think of what your purpose is. And he asks her, Moses, Jesus Christ, Muhammad, Rama, Buddha, who were they? And how do you relate to them? She said, Vladimir, those are my elder brothers you have named. I am not in a position to judge their works, but I shall say one thing. None of them had their fill of earthly love. He says, that can't be. Every single one of them has millions of worshiping followers, even today. And she said to him, but worship does not mean love. It only exhausts a worshiper's power of thought, a power exclusive to man. Great is the egregore, and that's a Russian word, and it's translated in the book as a unifying collective psychic field. Anyway, she's saying again, great is the egregore of my brothers. For millions of years, many people have fed it through their worship, and in so doing, each worshiper lost some of his energy. Over the centuries, there have been many willing to condemn the deeds of my brothers, and I could not understand why they made such great efforts to feed their own egregore, building up its energy over thousands and thousands of years. Nobody has been able to guess their secret until the dawn of the present age. And my brothers decided to gather the accumulated energy into a single whole in order to distribute it to souls now living on the earth. A new millennium, and this is spoken of in year 2000, a new millennium will soon be given birth in which the gods will settle the earth, those people whose conscious awareness will allow them to accept this energy in all its worth. Vladimir, I beg of you, get up off your knees. It is painful for any father to see his son bowed down and enslaved. It is only the dark forces that have always tried to demean man's significance. Vladimir, get up off your knees. Refuse to betray yourself. Do not separate yourself from me. He responded, I wasn't separating myself from you. On the contrary, it seems I've just begun to understand you. Only I don't agree that worship interferes with love. On the contrary, all believers say that they love God, and I am bowing down before you as a goddess. But you are frightened for some reason. You've become upset. She said, Vladimir, we have known each other for 5 years now. A lot of time has gone by since that night when our son was conceived. But ever since that time, not once have you had the desire to touch me, to give me the look you give to other women. Lack of understanding and now worship do not allow love to reveal itself. Worship
wow.
does not bring forth children. And he says, well, that's because you are not exactly a woman, Anastasia. I shared that in my talk, and it's also in my an article on my website called Dancing with the Light and Shadows. But I shared that for the main reason of what it said about worship. Now, all of my, I was raised a fundamentalist Christian, as I indicated the last time, and as you know very well. And worship is a big part of not only Christianity, but all major world religions.
Yeah.
Whether it's worship of the prophet, whether it's worship of, it's usually worship of the prophet or the messenger that God sent to that particular people at that particular time.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a universal thing. But the revelation that Anastasia is making here is that when we are not seeing ourselves as equal, when we are seeing another created being of God, of which we are all gods, that's biblical. I'm not making that up. That's from the Bible.
Do you have at your fingertips that chapter and verse where Christ said, "Know ye not that ye are gods"?
Ooh. I know he was quoting David in the Psalms, and I think I referred to that the last time, but one of the things in my memorization of scriptures is I didn't, in many cases, memorize the chapter and verse, since they were added much later anyway. As a means of being able to find things more quickly.
I thought he had said that to the apostles at one time. And I think maybe Dr. Jessica Worth said it was in John, possibly. I can't remember. And I thought, oh, God.
You know, if I had thought of it, I would have looked it up and had it on the tip of my tongue. And I'm not going to get up and run into my room, library and get my concordance out. I used it just last night to prop up a monitor for a wonderful presentation that was made here at the center. But I don't have it here in the room where I'm sitting.
Well, concerning Anastasia, a lot, I know we have listeners from all over the world, and a lot of people would say, people of fundamentalist belief and other beliefs also would say, this sounds like one of those that Christ warned about, the wolves in sheep clothing coming, saying, find him in the desert, he's in the desert, or he's in Siberia. How can you answer to that?
Well, you can't really answer.
You can't
really answer a fundamentalist. Fundamentalists, anything. I don't care if it's a religious fundamentalist or a scientist who outright discards anything that's mystical or spiritual. I don't care what the particular mindset is. A fundamentalist is a person who is very narrow-minded, who believes they know all the answers, who is stuck in their own ego. They wear the white hat and everybody else is going to hell.
Mm.
Now, they may not term it, every different group of people may not term it that way, but that's the general attitude. And it is what is the problem with the world. In both articles that I mentioned, I began with a quotation from Albert Einstein, which was made in 1954. And I'm going to read that to you. Again, both articles begin with this quotation because I think it's so significant. He said, "A human being is part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space.
Uh-huh.
We experience ourselves, our thoughts, and feelings as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from the prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. The true value of a human being is determined by the measure and the sense in which they have obtained liberation from the self. And I actually like the word ego better, where he's using self. Self to me means the spiritual part of us. Ego means the natural part of us. So it's just a difference in terminology. But
yeah.
He used the word self. Anyway, the final sentence in his quotation is, "We shall require a substantially new manner of thinking if unity is to survive." And this brings me back. You know I'm the paradox man. I published Paradox for 5 years, a purposely provocative publication for people who, a catalyst for people who wanted to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And fundamentalism doesn't allow growth because it doesn't allow thinking outside the box. The paradox is that God is everywhere in everything. By even fundamentalists and all theological definitions, God is all that is. God is in everything, everywhere present. God is all-knowing. God is all-powerful. These are terms, these are universal terms that we have applied to the concept of deity. Now, granted, there are atheists and people that aren't going to believe those, but nevertheless, they are generally commonly held beliefs in defining the indefinable, God. But God being the origin of all life, as I'm using the term right now, or the creator of all things, only had himself, herself, itself, to create from. And God is both apart from and yet within the very thing that it created, since he's everywhere present and in all things.
Well, man was created in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
To quote,
and everything that is in God is in us. In fact, everything that is in everything is, everything that God created is fully loaded with God, because God is all that is, the light and the dark, the good and the evil, if you will, life and death, masculine and feminine, all pairs of opposites are united in God. And the healing that is to take place in our generation, the privilege that we have as human beings is to wake up from our sleep. And there are many scriptures that tell us to wake up from our sleep. I liked what the lady said on Rebecca's show earlier, when she said that, I lost my train of thought right now. She said that, help me. Did you listen to Dr. Burley?
I was in and out of the room. I must have missed that part.
Well, I thought, yes, that's exactly right, but I can't remember the exact words that she used. But it was along the line of that God is in it all, that God is in everything. And that's what we as humans have forgotten, because remember, we have gone on this long journey through time and space trying to be separate, trying to prove that we're not part of God.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole history as prodigal children bears witness to the fact that we have been alienated. We are alienated creatures. We see ourselves as alienated from God, if we have any concept of God at all. But whether we have a concept of God or not, the mere pattern of our living has demonstrated plainly that we see ourselves as separate from one another. And that separation, if we really examine our inner consciousness, that separation comes because we really believe we're separated from ourselves. Or, in other words, we don't remember who we are. As Anastasia said, you are man too, only you are living your life in vanity and you have not been able to think what your purpose is. And those are Anastasia's words. You haven't remembered who you are. And fundamentalists, anything, are people that are still living in a very narrow confines of belief that I call ego religion. I'm right, my viewpoints are the only ones that matter. They're the only ones that make any sense to me, because they're the only ones that I'm willing to accept or entertain. Fundamentalists are not noted for entertaining contrary points of view.
Right.
They do not want to expand their thinking. They already know the answers. God said it. I believe it, and that settles it. I mean, that's the common fundamentalist point of view. But what they've done there is they've not only shrunk themselves, they've shrunk God.
Exactly.
They've made God into a puny being who is bigoted and narrow-minded and vengeful beyond degree, and they even have scriptures to prove that God is vengeful. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. But people all over the world, as the previous speaker on Dr. Carley says, people are waking up that is not God is love. That doesn't fit the purpose of God is love. When I spoke Sunday, and again, that message is actually contained on my website, Dancing with Light and Shadows.
Give your website numbers again, please, for the audience.
Metta Groups. That's M-E-T, as in Thomas, Metta, M-E-T-A, groups.info. And, of course, it's www and all that stuff. And that's the Paradox Online or Food for Thought section of the website where you'll find my articles and other articles as well.
I was going to say, do you have your Paradox articles archived?
No.
Ooh,
no, I don't. I have quite a few articles on the website, but it's not large enough to... I mean, I had 60 issues of Paradox magazine that were published, and I wrote at least 3 or 4 articles in every issue. It was a third. Most of them were 32 pages long, and there were a lot of other articles as well. But I wrote at least 3 or 4 in virtually every issue. So that's way more articles than I think I would have room for on my website, at least at this point in time.
I have a question to ask you, and I know there's a lot of folks out there who are curious about this. Did Anastasia mention our, did Anastasia mention our origins from other worlds, possibly? Did she go into this in any of the 6 books?
Well, she traces her lineage back at least 10,000 years, and she she states that she's in communication with very ancient women, especially going back 10,000 years. She has relatives that were from ancient Egypt that lived in the time of Jesus. She talks about a lot of things. She's able, with her gift, time is irrelevant. She is connected to it. Her mind works so extremely fast, and it's so brilliant. I mean, she can lay down and ponder something for a minute or two and come up with a technological solution to a technological problem, never having been educated in technology, simply because she's connected with the God force. She's connected with the cosmos, with all that is. And she's a living demonstration. And as from the article, she's not looking to be put on a pedestal. Quite the contrary. And that's true of Jesus. And I believe it was true of every messenger that God ever sent in any culture at any time. If God sent the message was that you are all my children and I love you all equally. Do not make yourselves superior to one another. Do not separate yourselves from one another. Again, as Anastasia coined it, worship is not love.
That is true.
When we put another on a pedestal, We do not truly lift them up. We demean everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We demean everyone by putting anyone on a pedestal. Now, there's a lot of talk in the in a lot of religious circles, metaphysical circles, New Age circles, Christian circles, Muslim circles. I mean, not that I frequent Muslim circles, but it's a universal thing that we all think we're right, and we all think that we're the ones with the white hats and the other ones are the black-hatted people. What God is saying through the Holy Spirit to us, and this goes back to Einstein's quote, we need a new way of thinking. It's not light versus dark. We've got to get that through our heads. Now, if that's where we are in our consciousness, that we have to, we're starting to recognize the opposites, and they're becoming living to us, and we're making a choice. That is not who I am, being what we consider dark. This is who I am. I am a light being. Okay, that's where our consciousness is, and I'm not saying that needs to be condemned. But we need to also see that beyond it all, God embraces the light and the darkness by definition of what God is, of what the Creator is. And when we see that God encompasses it all, and that we're moving toward God consciousness, or Christ consciousness, then we too will see that we're moving to a place where there's a divine marriage that takes place within us, the human with the divine becoming one.
Mm-hmm.
The light and the dark becoming one. What I believe is going to happen, and I don't know the timetable or how long this process is going to take, but the light and the darkness are moving not, it appears that it's moving further and further apart. It appears that the polarization is becoming more and more rampant. Problems seem to be escalating exponentially. That's the appearance of things. That's why it's normal to be afraid. It's very human to be afraid. We see this, and it causes our hearts to skip a whole bunch of beats and to beat a whole lot faster by the very nature of we don't understand what's going on. But if we were to really open our eyes and our minds, to get our minds around the concept that God is bigger than all of these problems, and that's where we're headed. We're headed to see from inside of God. When I read the little boy, I think I mentioned this the last time, I can't remember if I did or not, but when I read what that little boy read when he was talking to, reading God's book.
I believe you did mention that, but please go into it again.
You know, he made the statement, I'm looking for it on my place here, but I already am, Papa. The universe is a thought from which was born a dream, which is partially visible as matter. My son, you are infinite. You are eternal. And all your dreams are within you. When I read those words, you are infinite, you are eternal, and all your dreams are within you. Something happened to me in that moment that catapulted me into a different frame of mind, in which for a period, and I don't know how long it lasted, several minutes at least, it seemed like everything in the world that I'm aware of was inside of me. Nothing
mm-hmm.
was external, good or bad, as I perceive it and judge it, good or bad. Nothing was external to me. It was all taking place within me. In other words, by hearing those words of this little boy reading from God's, from his book, as it's recorded in Anastasia, in the book's Anastasia, he was pointing up to God. It's his book. And he's calling me my son. And he's saying it to all of us, regardless of gender. My child, you are infinite. You are eternal. all your dreams, and I hear the words, even though it's not written there, I hear the words of creation. All your dreams of creation are within you. We begin to see from God's consciousness. God doesn't take sides. God is neutral. God uses the dark as much as he uses the light. Now, that is a concept to the rational mind that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. But God is not rational. God is super irrational. God is so far beyond our rational mind. You know, even the Bible says we, you know, have this, let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God didn't think it was robbery to be equal with God, yet made himself of no reputation. And I could go on and on, but I'm not going to. I think I quoted that the last time, too. But that's one of my favorite scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Let this mind be in you that was in Christ, who being made in the form of God didn't think it was robbery to be equal with God. Now, that's Bible. Let the fundamentalists chew on that a little bit. Because the Holy Spirit is saying, think like this. You are made in the image of God. It's not blasphemy to consider yourselves equal with God. And that means everything that takes place is taking place inside of you, because everything is taking place inside of God. God is the circumference that embraces all things. That's why God is love. If God were partial, as we have created him in our image, if God were partial, then hell would be a real thing and God would punish people forever as we've created that. But that's a lie. That's not who God is. That's a distorted caricature.
Well, let me interrupt you on this thought for one moment. I have always questioned the existence of an eternal hell that many fundamentalists talk about, because if God is our Father, our Creator, and loves all, and we are made like God, I don't know of a parent who would condemn their child to eternal, never-ending punishment, never-ending, never seeing them again, never-ending, eternal punishment. This is absolutely illogical. Absolutely illogical that we make God so small, make God smaller than we are.
Absolutely.
Humans. And I have talked to a lot of atheists, who self-proclaimed atheists in the past, who say they don't believe in God because of this one concept of hell. And you explain that away, and they go, oh, yeah, I never thought of that.
Well,
you know,
ironically, go ahead.
At least it opens their mind a little on that. And it makes some of the fundamentalists stop and think also, I feel, about this. I think this is a very, very important concept.
Well, when Carlton Pearson, the black evangelist minister from Oklahoma City that I mentioned on your program the last time, when he was looking at what was happening in Rwanda a decade or so ago, he had the thought, that's hell. You know, what they've created, that's hell. And then the Holy Spirit started saying, yes, and you've created it. You, being humans, you've created that. I didn't create that. You created that. And how did we create it? We created it by seeing ourselves as separate from God. And when we see ourselves as separate from God, automatically we feel unloved. And if we're unloved, then all the fear comes in, because we're also alienated. And it leads to a chain of emotional responses, many of which are actually unconscious. We don't even think about them, and yet the dynamics of them are running our lives, causing us to fear, causing us to think that we lack things, causing us to imagine every ill and everybody's out to get us. We become totally paranoid. We become totally enslaved by our own fear.
And yeah.
This is the human condition, and we're waking up, and many of us are starting to see. And when it reaches a certain critical mass, what will happen is all of a sudden, in the twinkling of an eye, snap of a finger, everything is going to be different. The whole earth, the whole world is going to be transformed seemingly overnight, and yet the process has been going on really since the beginning of time, but it's been accelerated in our lifetime.
Yes, it has.
I listened to Drunvalo Melchizedek earlier before I listened to Dr. Carly. I watched an hour video of Drunvalo Melchizedek, and he was talking about how astounding the acceleration of consciousness has been on the planet Earth, so that it's drawn literally visitors from realms even beyond our own galaxy. The entire cosmos is focused on what's happening on Earth right now, because it has never happened before in the history of creation, where this divine experiment that we were able to play with the idea that we were separate from God, and a darkness is what led that experiment. They were Lucifer, if you will, is in control of it, and yet Lucifer is making a peace, if you will, with Michael, who is the other representative, the other archangel that's involved in this thing. And I'm using Drunvalo Melchizedek's words. But I've had personal experience where these two beings, powerful, powerful entities, laid down their swords. And, I mean, that happened when I was still writing Paradox. So that was probably 1998, 1999 that I had that vision of Michael and Lucifer actually making peace with each other. Now, this will blow us all away, because if they make peace with each other, then if we're going to carry on the war has to be inside, and it's going to wake us up. And so all these dark things that are happening on the planet, Bush and all the evil with the FDA and all the evil with all these evils that are on the earth, these apparent things, they're gifts to us, not to make us afraid, but ultimately to wake us up and say, that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm God's daughter. I'm God's son. I'm a child of the living God, the creator who made me and who loves me and has never stopped loving me. Our religion.
A quote just came to mind, Ron. Forgive me for interrupting you.
No, go.
They call Christ, didn't he call himself the Son of Man?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's interesting in the Bible when it talks about the Antichrist and how the Antichrist would be defined. Not those who say that Jesus was not. You know, Jesus was God. That's the Christian belief.
Right.
And it's true. Jesus was God. But so are we all God.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the Antichrist is recognized by those who deny that Jesus came in the flesh. In other words, those that deny that Jesus was man, was human. So that's how you identify the Antichrist, and that's exactly what Christianity has done. They have denied the humanity of Jesus, and in so doing have identified themselves unconsciously with that which is opposed, not in favor of Christ. Everything in our world is backwards. We have been so brainwashed and so manipulated by our culture. But we've got to forgive ourselves, because when I say they did it, no, we did it to ourselves by maintaining the war, by thinking we could eliminate them. They are the problem. No, we are the problem. In fact, let me read a couple of paragraphs from my message on Sunday. This is what I wrote. We can experience fear and be scared. It's very human. And we can also embrace the sacred that includes everything. Though they may seem worlds apart, they are merely the transposition of two simple letters, scared or sacred.
Hmm.
The first is division, The second, unity or wholeness. Darkness is not to be feared. Love needs no protection from the dark. Why? Because one cannot spread darkness. Darkness does not exist within itself, only as contrast within its relationship to light. Of course, one in darkness may choose to fear light, which has no eternal or permanent effect on reality. All choices between real polarities, masculine or feminine, light or dark, positive or negative, life or death, up or down, inner or outer, spiritual or matter, and more, are inherently false choices. Any choice between real polarities is illusionary, since all pairs of opposites exist as a whole. They are energetically inseparable. Their purpose is contrast. And that is a great and essential gift that enables experience. We can choose to remain at war with each side polarizing against the other, or we can choose to dance. Fourth dimensional thinking embraces the paradoxes. The apparent opposites that, upon closer examination, are found to be merely two sides of the same coin. The unification of opposites within each of us is a divine marriage. It makes us whole again, perhaps for the very first time in time. It is attainable, yet it requires seeing wholeness and unity within the beautiful diversity of life. It requires loving all that is, for only love has the power to heal. Only love can stop the insanity of war. It's an individual job, one soul at a time. God knows when critical mass is reached, then the entire world transforms in the twinkling of an eye. That will happen any day now. And that's my belief, that we are actually on the threshold of huge, huge shifts.
Well, that I would agree with you 100%. I was just hearing a program the other night on Dick Sutphin's radio show, and he was saying the Hopi elders and the elders from many tribes have gotten together. They used to say, "It is the 11th hour. Wake up! It is the 11th hour." And now the elders are saying, the hour is now.
Right. It's, so, it's 11 hours, 59 minutes, and 50-some seconds.
Right, exactly.
You know, we're right at the very edge of the shift.
Unfortunately, we're also at the edge of time here, and we're running out of time. But what I would like to do in the future, I seem to have a lot of requests to have you back. People love hearing you. And you have always had an interesting take on integrating the darkness with the light. Do you recall this? We've had conversations in the past on this.
It's been my theme for years, and few people have understood me, and many
would
have judged
you
me because
be
of
willing
that.
In the future, within the next couple of months, to come back on the show again and to present this? Would you be willing to do that?
Of course, you know that.
Okay, well, I have to ask you. I've got to be polite.
Yes, I know. But, you know, I know that people get their toes stepped on when I start challenging some of their sacred cows, but I've been a sacred cow kicker for a long time, and that's part of my mission. And each of us has a role to play, and each role is important in the whole.
Yes,
none of
it
us
is.
Have all
and I've answers. Always said, one reason I admire you so much is because you are very similar in ways to Dr. Rebecca Carley, who is one of my heroes also. And you have the courage to stand up and ring the bell, whether or not we like the sound of the bell you're ringing at the time. We have to pay attention to it. And no matter how persecuted that you have been, you are still there ringing that bell.
Yes,
and that, my dear, that is heroism in my book. I have seen you go through hell. I have seen people stand against you, many, and you're still there. And that's one reason I admire you so much. I admire warriors like yourself. You are a warrior, and a warrior of light. So, but this is a very interesting. I can't say I happen to agree with it all, but I certainly I'd love to have you present this on a program in the future. And you will be willing?
I certainly will, Andra. You're one of my
fantastic,
better friends. And I really appreciate what you're doing, and we're each doing our little part, and together we are changing the world. We really are.
Yes,
more than
we are.
More than it appears at this moment.
Yeah, we are changing the world because we're changing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have time tonight. I wish I could finish it off by reading the Desiderata again. But we don't have time, so I'm not going to do it, and because I don't want to run into the Cyber Shaman's time.
Right,
and I invite you all you listeners, to please stay tuned for the Cyber Shaman following. And don't forget to tune in next week to Dr. Rebecca Carley's show, What's Ailing America, at 8:30, and 1 hour with Andra at 9:30. And then the Cyber Shaman. So anyway, Ron, thank you so very, very much. You don't
thank
know how much I
thank you for having me on again.
And, oh, yes, you're going to be a kind of a regular guest if I can swing this. And if you can swing it with all your time.
I'll do my best.
You don't have much of it, I know. But anyway, God bless you all. And thank you again, Ron, and I bid you good night and farewell until next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.